Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to In Response, episode 3. I'm Greg, and as always, I'm here with my good buddy, Logan.
What's up, everybody?
So Logan, how's it going?
Hey, you know, not bad. I've had Modern on the brain the last week because of the Pro Tour, but big things happening in Standard this week.
Definitely, and we will get to that here in just a minute. First off, I want to let everybody know that we are now on MTGCast, on MTGCast.com. You can go there and search us In Response, and you will find us right there. Listen to our episodes from there. So what do you think about that, Logan? Pretty exciting news for the fans, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a big step for the podcast, and it's awesome that they decided to go with us since we are such a new podcast, and I'm kind of pumped for what this means for the future.
Yeah, it's amazing. Also, another thing that we had this week, I had a deck tech on CMDR decks for my Erebos Mono Black French Commander deck.
Nice. It's one of those formats I've always wanted to get into, but I never did.
Yeah, it's one of those formats that's kind of a miser's format, you may want to say.
Like, I don't know, like, I was going to try it, and then Tiny Leaders happened, and then I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, I feel you on that. I've built 4 Tiny Leaders decks. Let's talk about this. So, all right, so enough rambling. We're going to get into the Crack-A-Pack. I've got our pack right here, and so we're going to start off in the common slot with Typhoid Rats.
I mean, it's solid. It's always been solid. It'll continue to be solid.
Yeah, death touch 1/1s. I block everything, bro.
Yeah, Sedge, Scorpion, Typhoid Rat. Doesn't matter what its name is. It's
right.
It's playable.
Right. All right, man. In the next uncommon or the next common slot, we've got Whisk Away. That's the 2 and a blue. Put a target attacking or blocking creature on top of its Lunar's Library. Seems spicy.
It seems okay. I don't know. Like, the fact that it's instant speed makes it a lot better.
Right.
And that it's attacking or blocking. So I could see this as a 1 or 2 of. I like to play blue-green a lot in this format. So I could definitely see this as a 1 or 2 of if somebody's trying to.
I actually see this a lot in the drafts at our local stores here in town, and one of our listeners actually approached me the other day and said that he plays this in his blue-green tempo deck off of your recommendation.
Nice.
So, next up, we've got Rakshasa's Disdain, 2 and a blue, counter target spell, unless its controller plays 1 for each card in your graveyard. Seems good.
So worse circular logic.
Basically.
Okay. You've really got to... I don't know. Like, it seems okay in certain decks, but at the same time, it really doesn't play great with Delve.
Right.
So, this is a card that I've never really actively gone out of my way to draft in all of my drafts of this format.
I have myself, I picked this up in the pre-release in the sealed event, and I was in Sultai anyway, so I played this with some other mill cards, and it seemed okay to me.
I mean, again, it depends on the deck. I just feel right. Like there's more powerful things you could be doing in this format.
Yeah, definitely at 3. So next up in the common slot, we have Abzan Sky Captain, 3 and a white for a 2/2 flyer. When it dies, you bolster 2. So you just basically make sure it dies and you get make something bigger.
Yeah, I'm happy with 2 or 3 of these.
I'm happy with a lot of these if I can get away with it.
One thing I've noticed, though, unless nobody for some reason is taking it, white seems to be fought over quite a bit now that Fate's been added. And I've gotten to the point now where I almost want to just steer clear of white because it's going to be picked over so much that it's hard to get a consistent deck out of it right now.
Yeah, I agree. Next up, we've got Enhanced Awareness. 4 and a blue, draw 3, then discard a card.
I don't know. It seems okay.
I mean, late game, this could kind of help fuel you back into the game a little bit. But it's, I mean, it's just worse than Treasure Cruise, though. I mean, if you get Cruise in, like, Khan's Fate draft, then you're going to take Cruise over this every time.
It's kind of like a bad Jace's Ingenuity.
Yeah.
That card sees standard play, so, I mean, there are some decks that might want this as a one or two of, but...
Sure.
There's definitely better options.
Definitely. Next up, we got Soul Summons, one and a white sorcery. Manifest the top card.
This card is a lot better than people originally gave it credit for.
Oh, definitely. You can, if you're in that like blue-white archetype, you can like manipulate the top of your deck and then like start manifesting good stuff.
I was playing it. I ended up in a draft at a local store where I had three Soul Summons in my pool, and two of the Temur Sabertooth.
Oh, okay. That's the draft we went and did.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had situations come up where I also had a wild call, which are like Soul Summons on roids, but...
Yeah.
Like, you manifest the card, and if it's a relevant spell, you then bounce it with the Sabertooth, and you can cast it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's like... Manifest definitely has a lot of play to it, and Sabertooth by itself can just win games, because...
I mean, Sabertooth is seeing standard play.
Is it?
Yeah, in the...
Oh, the Ascendancy deck.
The Temur Ascendancy combo.
Yeah. I forgot about that deck.
That thing is sweet. So here, our next card here is going to fit right into the archetype that you love the most. Ethereal Ambush. Three and a green and a blue. Instant. Manifest the top two cards of your library.
Oh, yeah. This card. I was on the fence about it in some of our earlier discussions, but
sure.
Having played this thing, it's awesome.
It's solid.
I mean, I had a situation, this was late game.
Sure.
Where I had Sabertooth. The Sabertooth's just love me lately in draft. It's kind of awesome. But I had a Sabertooth out. And 7 mana. So, they go to attack. I Ethereal Ambush. I block with the Manifest creatures. One of the Manifests was a Force Away.
Oh.
I then make Temur Indestructible. Block. And then Force Away the other attacker.
Like, seems spicy.
Yeah, so... 4 creatures coming at me. I blocked 3, killed 2, bounced 1.
Wow.
And this card just has a lot of play to it. Like, 5 mana seems weird to call it a tempo play, but depending on what you get, it's good. Like,
yeah.
The nuttiest draft I've had so far is I had a blue-green deck where I had Sabertooth and Whisperwood in it.
Oh, wow.
So it's like Ethereal and then Whisperwood and just all these Manifest dudes. And then Secret Plans.
Oh, we're on the Secret Plans deck. Okay.
Well, no, it just was there for value because I had so many Manifestors.
Oh, geez.
And it worked out because all of my 2/3 Manifest creatures profitably traded with theirs. It's
a good card, especially in this limited format.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got Temur Battle Rage, one in a red, instant. Target creature gains double strike until end of turn. I played this when we had that PPTQ. I played this as a 4-of in my mono-red aggro deck. It didn't do a lot of work for me, but I could see where it could be beneficial in limited.
The double strike is nice, but with the ferocious of trample on top of that, just...
Oh, definitely.
Get out of here. That's...
It's ridiculous.
I thought about putting it in my Ural the Miststalker EDH. It's not an aura, of course, but it's... I mean, it makes him into a 10-power threat.
It could get you value.
Yeah. Like, I've gone Dragon Claw... instant speed onto Ural in combat, and it's done some broke things, so it's like, add Battle Rage on top of the Dragon Claw, and that's 14 power.
That's pretty insane. So next up we have Smoldering Ifrit. So one in a red, 2/2. So it's a bear. It's a red bear. And then when it dies, it shoots you for 2. It shocks you.
I mean, I've played this in some aggro strategies. Wasn't a huge fan of it. It's okay as a roll filler if you really need 2 drops, but
yeah,
it's mediocre. It's a bear.
It's just a meh bear. Our next one, though, is a premium 2-drop and limited, Mardu Scout. Double red dash for 1 and a red, 3/1. This guy, I will high pick him all day.
Yeah. The Sand Surfer.
The Sand Surfer. He is actually the playmat for GP Miami.
That wouldn't be a bad one to have.
He's the Sand Surfer himself, so.
Really, really frustrated I missed the game day, too, because I wanted that Ugin mat.
Ugin mats are pretty sweet.
This guy's good if you're in a red aggro strategy. Dash, of course, is a very relevant mechanic because there is some sorcery speed removal in this format that this card dodges. And, yeah. Like, Dash itself is pretty nuts because I played a Dash-themed limited deck where the guy had 2 of the Dash Dragon and the Scouts.
Wow. And
what's the other red Dash creature when he attacks a creature can't block?
Heel Cutter?
Yeah.
Yeah, Heel Cutter is awesome.
So he had all those things going, and I'm just like, what in the world is happening?
Yeah.
But,
so that's the end of our commons. Going into the uncommons, we have Frostwalker. So 1 and a blue for a 4/1. When it becomes the target of a spell or ability, sack it. So, I don't know about this guy.
Pressure point turns into removal. I'm not sold on him.
Yeah, the only thing that I could see is, like, early Ferocious triggers.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, though, like, for example, say you have the 1 blue counterspell with Ferocious that's played in Heroic, what's it called?
Stubborn Denial.
Say you Stubborn Denial something that's targeting this.
Sure.
The fact that it was targeted, even though the spell is countered, it still dies.
Yeah, it still dies. It's not that great.
No,
if you really need 2 drops in blue for early game, this is okay, but you better hope that they don't target it.
Yeah,
you better hope you don't need to target it.
Yeah.
So our next uncommon is actually something we were just talking about a little bit earlier. Good old Teamer's Sabretooth. 2 and 2 green, 4/3. For 1 and a green, you can return another creature to its owner's hand. If you do, it becomes indestructible.
There are very few rares in this pack that would make me not pick one, this card.
Yeah, this card is super solid. It sees standard play. It's just one of those, what we like to call mythic uncommons. Taking a page out of the book of Marshall Sutcliffe for a second, he calls them mythic uncommons. So this card is just premium in a draft format where you've got the blue-green tempo decks and stuff like that.
I love having 2 or 3 of these.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's just super solid. He just does all the things you want to do in green.
I've had games where I was completely out of the game, and then I drew a Sabretooth, and I won the game.
Seems good.
Because ground threats cannot do anything about this guy. And he's a 5-turn clock.
Yeah, he is basically just, I'm going to beat in 4/4 every time. So next up in the uncommons, our final uncommon, Elite Scale Guard. 4 and a white for a 2/3. When he enters, bolster 2. Whenever a creature you control with a 1/1 counter on it attacks, tap target defending player, or a creature the defending player controls. So
it's okay.
This is another one of those kind of premium uncommons. If you're really into the white strategy, I see this guy being really good for you.
Yeah, he seems okay. I wouldn't want more than 1 or 2 of him in my, because like you don't, in the aggressive decks that would benefit from him.
Sure.
You don't want any. You don't want a lot of things polluting the top of your curve.
Yeah. So we're going to get to the rare in just a second. The land, it's not that great. It's Jungle Hollow, so it's the green-black gain land.
I mean, fixing's fixing.
Fixing is fixing, so we'll kind of leave it at that. Our rare, it's okay. I probably wouldn't pick one. It's a Tarkir World Renderer, 5 red-green, flying trample. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, it gains double strike until end of turn. It's a 6/4.
Seems okay. I'm still taking Sabretooth.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I'm either taking Sabretooth or Mardu Scout, one of the two. If I, like, if this is pick two, like, say you're sitting off to my left or off to my right and passing to me, and you take Team or Sabretooth, I'm taking Mardu Scout or Elite Scale Guard.
Yeah.
That's basically how this is going to go. A Tarkir is going to wheel. I don't see any use for him.
Well, depending on how skilled everyone else in the at the table is, because you also have those new guys who draft for the first or second time, and they go, whoa, dragon, awesome.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, dragon, okay. that's a thought going
through. Seven mana. One more and I could be casting Ugin.
Right? And then the guy next to you pulls an Ugin.
Isn't that how it always works?
Always, man. All right, so before we get into our weekly topics, we want to apologize for last week. We didn't have an episode up. We had some audio issues. Unfortunately, that was the one-on-one session we actually had in my house, so we had some audio issues there.
But in the future, we'll hopefully be able to rectify those and learn. Like we said, we're still a very new podcast. We're still learning as we go, and just thank you guys for your patience and support.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, guys. And let's get into the weekly topic, shall we?
Yeah,
so first, okay, so what do you want to talk about first, Logan? We've got some spicy stuff to talk about right now.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to talk, the main topic for tonight is going to be Standard, because that was huge this week.
Yes.
But since we kind of weren't around last week, there's some stuff about Modern that I'd like to talk about first.
Oh, yeah. So the Pro Tour was, what, a week and a half ago now?
Yeah.
Basically a week and a half ago. So Pro Tour Fate Reforged happened. We had the Splinter Twin deck win the whole thing. Big surprise, right?
Yeah. No, not really.
Not really.
With Pod out of the way, Abzan really had to pull a lot of weight in order to try to shut down Twin, and Twin was just one of those decks that was best suited to fill in that void. I feel like it lines up really well against Abzan. And
right.
It was a good choice for the tournament.
Yeah, that was big shout out to Antonio Del Moral Leon for his win of the Pro Tour Fate Reforged. That Twin deck was insane.
Also, he is now the first Spaniard to ever win a Pro Tour.
Yeah, insane. Next up, we had the United States' own Justin Cohen playing Amulet Bloom combo. This deck is sweet. I love watching this deck. I actually seen it last night. They had Modern at one of the shops here in town, and I watched it play out, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a little bit outside of the type of deck that I would consider. It feels like a whole lot of hoops to jump through to get stuff to go down, but I can understand the appeal. There are those combo guys and guys who like to think outside the box, and
yeah,
this is a baby of Cohen and Sam Black, and
yeah,
we all know Sam Black loves his blasting stations and goblin bombardments. And
oh yeah, Sam Black is that guy that you look forward to for innovation in a format.
He'll also dirtle you to death any chance he gets.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, in third place, we've got Yelgar Vigersma from Karako playing Splinter Twin. No surprise there.
Yeah. First top eight for... good top eight for him. I was sad that he wasn't able to get the win, because it would have been the solo PT win is one of the few things missing from his resume now.
Yeah.
Been around for a while.
Oh, yeah. He's one of those mainstays of, like, the I'm trying to think how you explain it to me, the old guard.
Oh, yeah. He was one of the old school. Like, he tested with Pantheon, didn't go with the Pantheon deck, decided to go with Twin, and clearly the decision paid off for him.
Oh, yeah. Third in a pro tour is nothing to sneeze at.
No.
So, next up, we've got Jesse Hampton from the United States playing Abzan.
Yeah. His list I was a real big fan of. He had, like, one of my pet cards of the format in the sideboard. He had three copies of Aven Mind Sensor.
Yeah, the card's just good.
I heard you're playing Scapeshift. Well, kill me off the top four.
Yeah, seems good.
And then he also had a singleton of Soren Solemn Visitor in the board, which breaks the mirror in half because all of your creatures are four fives, but Soren's plus one. Not only do you get the lifelink, but you also are able to overcome that power, that extra point of toughness, which is huge in the mirror.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I see you're playing Siege Rhino too. Oh, here, let me plus my Soren real quick so I can kill your Siege Rhino with my Siege Rhino.
Yeah. Or Tasiger, or Goyf, or
basically anything in that deck. So next up we got Efro, good old Eric Froelich from Channel Fireball. He's on Abzan as well. Pretty much the same stock list.
Yeah, that's... I feel bad for Efro. Like, he's clearly one of the best players in the world, and has a lot of success. Top 8's a lot, but yeah. That Team Grand Prix that he won with Cheon and LSV...
Yeah.
It's the first trophy he's ever had.
Yeah, it is. And Efro, you know, he's one of those mainstays of the Pro Tour. He's always grinding. He was first going into top 8. He was the first seed.
Yeah. And he's definitely a good player.
Yeah, he's an amazing player. I always enjoy watching him, especially playing like Vintage and stuff like that, older formats.
Yeah.
Because he always does amazing in those formats.
Don't even get me started on that Vintage Super League this season.
Oh, there's, man.
There's some spice.
Oh, I know. Kai Buddha is in there? Let me tell you.
Bob Maher's deck.
Oh, dude, I've seen it.
Is a time capsule.
Oh, it's spicy.
Karabek's Torch kill you?
Yeah. All right, well...
2002?
Yeah, right? All right, so next up we got Seth Manfield from the United States playing Burn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Burn was going to be in this top 8.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Pod's out of the way, and that kind of gives some other decks some room to wiggle, so Burn decided to make an appearance.
Yeah, I mean, Burn is kind of like that whole throwing spaghetti at the wall thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like... Some of it's going to stick. Well, it's kind of Burn. Like, Burn is a deck that's saturated the modern format because it's pretty cheap to build, and it's aggressive. It gets free wins against some decks, but...
Sure. And then we've got Jacob Wilson's Abzan Aggro is what we're calling it, but it's actually Little Kid. It's basically Green White Splash Black.
Yeah. It's an Abzan deck that's designed to crush the mirror.
Yeah. It's really good. Like, I mean, he took it to 7th place.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very good choice for the format. Kibler was on a similar deck, but his draft didn't go as well from what I've heard. And he had some kind of rough matchups, I think, also. So
yeah.
But yeah, him and Kibler were on similar decks, but
yeah,
Jacob was able to take it to a top 8.
Yeah. Good for him. And I mean, that puts quite a few Channel Fireball guys in the top 8. And then our last member in the 8th slot.
This guy.
Li Shi Chan from China playing Burn.
Yep.
This fourth, guy.
Fourth top 8 in 3 years?
Yeah, fourth top 8 in 3 years. Oh, I hear you like top 8ing GPs. You must be Li Shi Chan.
Like, Pro Tours, he just top 8s all the time. And funny thing, The only modern PT he has not top aided was the one he did not compete in.
And that was Pro Tour Return to Ravnica? Or no, he was in...
That was the first one.
Okay.
In DC, I think, or something like that?
I think it was either DC or Chicago, one of the two.
Okay. But yeah, that was the only one he hasn't top aided when it comes to modern Pro Tours, and the guy just has this format figured out.
Yeah, I mean, something I've noticed, though, a lot of the Asian players, or just a lot of the players from, like, over in that side of the world, seem to figure out this format really fast. But, I mean, he's on MTG Mint Card.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a powerhouse team.
Yeah. They're definitely good. They came up with that Blue Moon deck, and then there was the their build of Jeskai Ascendancy and Standard that kind of took that Pro Tour by surprise.
Yeah, I believe that was the one with the transformative sideboard that went basically to like a teamer aggro.
Yeah, him and the Hong Kong guys came up with that during the protests, and that's... Under those situations, to come up with a deck that can top 8 like that is...
That's amazing.
Definitely impressive, but one of the things I would like to talk about, there's an article that Adrian Sullivan put up on Star City Games. This guy is known for his data mining, his research, and he went ahead and... Okay, picture the Pro Tour. Pro Tour Fate Reforged.
Okay, I've got this.
Now, take Draft out of the Pro Tour.
Okay, this is a completely different monster now because you've taken one format that a lot of players are pretty good in.
Yeah.
Completely out. And now you're changing the entire history of this event.
But what you're doing is you're getting a clear perspective of what are the best decks in Modern.
Right.
And that's what he has done. He constructed a top 8 based on Modern record performance only. And only 3 of our top 8 players from the Pro Tour are actually on this Modern only top 8. Like, starting in 8th place, we had John Finkel, his Infect deck. In the normal Pro Tour, he came in 10th. He was real close already, but yeah. This is the brainchild of Tom Ross. He brought this deck to Pantheon, and they all decided that, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. Let's go with this deck. Well, except for Yelger, he decided to just play Splinter Twin.
Right, and see, like, Tom Ross, I've always kind of followed his deck ideas and stuff like that. The guy plays Infect in Legacy. The guy plays Blue-White Heroic and Boss Sly. Oh, do you remember a little thing called Boss Naya?
Oh, yeah. funny thing. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but Yelger top-aided because of Draft. He is not in the Modern-only top 8.
Yeah, no.
Finkel with this Infect deck, however, is.
Yeah.
And that Carrion Call on the sideboard.
Yeah, right?
2-1-1 Infect insects. That's a... Would not have expected that.
No, wouldn't have expected that at all in a top 8 at all.
7th place, we've got Jesse Hampton. Still there, but a little bit lower.
Right.
So, but 6th place. Now this is a spicy one. Park Jong-soon. He got 9th place on Breakers going into the top 8.
Yeah.
And if you take those draft results away and just look at the deck, this deck, triple Scavenging Ooze, 4 Tarmogoyfs, 2 Corsair Crucifix, 3 Tassigers, 2 Chandra Pyromasters, 4 Liliana the Veil.
Yeah.
And then 17 pieces of removal, basically.
Yeah.
And then the sideboard has double Thundermaw Hellkite and triple Feed the Clan.
Like, we were talking about this deck a little bit before the show actually started, and you said triple Feed the Clan, and I was like, wait, what?
I mean, the deck is just nuts.
It is solid. I don't see anywhere, like, I don't see vulnerabilities here. All I see is value, 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 value.
Just jund them out.
Jund them out.
And, which gives me hope, because everybody's talking about where were all the jund decks this weekend, and I'm like, oh, they were there, they just didn't draft great.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So, then we have fifth place, Li Shi Tian, actually went higher with in the standings. He came in eighth in combined, but he's in fifth when it comes to the burn. He, again, Core Firewalker in the sideboard for the mirror. Great, great read on the format.
Oh, yeah.
And he did exactly what he came to do. Jacob Wilson's fourth place in Modern, which means the deck was a lot more impressive than his seventh place would lead you to believe.
Yeah.
In seeding. So he definitely won a few more games than his record would indicate. And then we have Burn in third, Yam Wing Chun, who was 15th place previously. His list is almost card for card identical to Li Shi Tian's. His draft just didn't happen to go as well. Tyler Hill in second place with another Infect list. He is not part of the Pantheon team, but came to a very similar Infect list. He does have Sylvan Scrying to fetch up Pendlehavens and Ink Moths, which is kind of impressive.
Something I'm noticing, I don't know if the John Finkel list had this, there's a Singleton Hercule's Recall on the sideboard.
Oh, Hercule's Recall, yeah. That card is amazing against Affinity.
Oh yeah, it's a blowout.
Which, speaking of, first place is Affinity. So number one seed, if you look at this in a Modern only.
Yeah.
He ended up in 12th because of draft.
Yeah, Roberto Esposito.
Oh yeah, this sideboard.
I know, this thing is insane.
Illness in the Ranks.
Yeah.
Shuts down Splinter Twin single-handedly because Deceiver Exarchs become 0/3s, and then the Pester Mites just die when they come into play.
Yeah.
Blood Moon shuts down a lot of decks in the format, as we've known for a while.
Yeah.
He's got Wear and Tear and Ancient Grudge, which means he's very well suited for the mirror.
Oh, and yeah.
Stain the Mind.
Like, what is this? Okay, M15 Bulk Rare.
Yeah, I wouldn't even play this in draft. Like, this is... but yeah. With all the creatures he's putting into play, that Convoke.
Yeah, definitely. The thing that I it didn't make any top tables or anything, but a deck that I saw a video for on YouTube, actually from your good buddies over at Gathering Magic on Inside the Deck, it was a Abzan Cartel Aristocrat deck.
Oh yeah, the Aristocrats with the Abzan.
Yeah.
Funny thing, I actually tried to, when Act 3 was big in Standard.
Sure.
When Brad Nelson was playing that Junk Aristocrats build in Standard.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to port it to Modern. And the funny thing is, that deck and this deck share like 65 of 75 cards.
I was going to say, it's playing like Young Wolf, Cartel Aristocrat, Doom Traveler, yeah. Lingering Souls, just good value yeah. stuff.
Tuka Tongue Thalid in there,
yeah.
maybe? The predecessor to Doom Traveler. And, I mean, the deck looks like a lot of fun. And I just made a straight Standard port of it into Modern back when it was Standard legal. And the deck did work for me. I didn't win the event, but I definitely had a winning record, which now that it's got tools like Abzan Ascendancy, though, I mean, the deck looks like it's a lot better positioned.
Oh yeah, it looks very fun, and I myself may put this together after I finish up a couple of other Modern decks.
Yeah, this is very revealing. This what if top eight.
Mm-hmm.
Two infect lists, an affinity list, two burn lists, and then Abzan filling things out.
Yeah.
No Amulet Bloom, no... And Jund, of course, was in there, Jund. Too.
Yeah.
Jund is like that cockroach. You keep banning it, and it just keeps finding ways to survive. And yeah, I just thought that was really interesting how dramatic of a difference.
Yeah, it's very dramatic, and it's just a complete shift of what the Pro Tour could have been.
But anyway...
So, I have to ask, Logan, after seeing all this information from the Pro Tour, what are you going to play in Modern?
I am sticking with my first love, which is Blue-Red Delver. I played this deck in Vintage, and I love the deck to pieces. I actually moved away from the deck when Cruise was a thing because I hated the linear version of the deck, but now that I can play the disruptive cards again... I'm really enjoying its spot. Some Moto 2-mans. A friend of mine has built my exact 75, and we were kind of working through some matches together, and deck performs really nicely. I'm really impressed with it, but I'm also working on a Jeskai control list.
Okay.
Which I showed you right before the show, and...
Yeah, it's spicy.
I like it a lot. It seems really well positioned against the Abzan decks, and yeah, and then I'll probably build an Abzan deck too at some point, just for the sake of, like, I'm not sure what this meta is going to look like. Let me just take Old Reliable and jam some games with it. But
sure, I'm actually I'm finishing up Burn. I'm doing Mono Red Burn.
Yeah,
got that going, and then. A spicy one that I built and I've been testing a little bit and that I kind of want to take to, you know, the modern events here in town and kind of put through the ringer is Mono Blue Niv-Magus Elemental Combo.
Yeah, that sounds like a very you deck.
Yeah, you know me, I like the, I don't like to be on the straight and narrow. I don't like to follow the meta. I like to just do my own thing.
Yeah, you're channeling your inner Greg Hatch as you try to do the dirtiest of broken things. And
oh, yes. I mean, the deck's pretty solid. It's got 10 mainboard creatures, no elemental fetching, nothing like that. It's literally 4 Niv-Magus Elemental, 4 Blister Coil Weird, and then 2 Artisan of Forms is the 10 creatures.
Okay, so it is pretty different than the mono blue Greg Hatch brew from.
Oh yeah.
Steven. Okay. Yeah,
this is very just like the only Phyrexian spell in the deck currently is 4 mutagenic growth. Everything else is literally cast off an island.
No Jataxian props?
Nope. I'm playing Peer Through Depths. I'm playing Telling Time. I'm playing all kinds of good little dirtily things.
You might want to consider Probe, just because, especially with a combo deck,
sure.
Making sure the coast is clear before you go all in
might help a little bit.
Yeah, but
yeah, and then a spicy one in the sideboard is a one of Ruthless Invasion.
Oh, okay. Yeah, everybody knows what that card does.
Yeah, it's 3 in a Phyrexian red. You know, non-artifact creatures cannot block this turn.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, you all remember that card, right? You all played that card all the time, right?
All the way back in New Phyrexia.
Oh yeah, but
so it's a pretty interesting deck. We'll definitely have to jam some games with it.
Yeah. I might actually look into this act. What act are we on now? 4 or 5 Aristocrats deck?
Yeah.
But
so as we mentioned earlier, this week was kind of big for Standard.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a Star City Open in good old Houston, Texas, where everything is bigger, especially the sandwiches.
I mean, I'm from Texas, so.
And this guy is a big guy. So we've got the top 8 here. Very interesting top 8.
I thought I thought that this deck was dead. Yeah. I thought it died months ago.
Yeah.
But it's back.
Yeah.
And by it, I'm referring to Green-Red Devotion. Looks a little different. It's got some updates.
Yeah.
But, man.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah, it curves out at Crater's Claws, or, I mean, if you can't draw Crater's Claws and you don't have anything better to do with your mana, I guess you can just cast Anugin. I mean,
that seems okay.
Yeah, a little mediocre or something, I don't know, but yeah. Right. Then those three Nissas on the sideboard.
I know, what? Like, hello, triple Nissa?
What that is for? It's additional ramp in the mirror, which is nice.
Right.
But it's also insurance against Perilous Vault control decks.
Yeah.
So because it's plus one to turn the lands into 4/4s, gives you a threat presence after they have popped a vault. Otherwise, you lose everything. So
yeah,
I like it for that. But
it's looking like the rest of the top 8 is pretty stacked too. In second, we got Jeskai Tokens, which is, you know, everybody pretty much knows this list.
Yeah.
So
but it's back.
Yeah.
I'm still not sold on Soulfire Grandmaster. Like, it's good when it's relevant, but it feels like it's only relevant in very certain situations.
Sure.
But, yeah, other than that, same list we come to know and fear.
Yeah. third place, we've got Red Green Aggro. Seems kind of, I don't know.
This is interesting. Yeah, there were two green-red devotion lists, by the way. Eighth place, Tan and Grace, also was playing it. And I bring that up because this red-green aggro deck and Tannen's version of devotion share a card in common, which is Shaman of the Great Hunt.
Oh, this card is so good.
Like, when you're looking at a big splashy deck with lots of 4-power creatures and stuff, this card is your Sphinx's Rev.
Yeah, that card is so good. I actually seen playing Modern.
Yeah. I have a friend who plays a Tamir aggro deck, and this card has done nothing but work for him. He actually won a PPTQ with this card in his deck.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, cards, nothing to ignore.
It's... Yeah, definitely. Next up in fourth, we have another Jeskai Tokens deck. Same basic principle.
Well, kind of. This guy is rocking Monastery Mentor and Brimaz in his deck.
Okay, spicy. I like it.
And the Wild Slash's main. Yeah, these decks, they're kind of operating on the same level, but not really.
Yeah.
They're
basically, but not really.
Yeah. Red White Aggro, that deck took a beating this last...
Oh, yeah.
It was considered one of the best, and then it just...
plummeted.
But this guy, I think, has the right idea on how to update the deck to handle the hate coming at it. With the main board Brimazes, those are really good, and the inclusion of Chandra...
Oh, yeah.
...to complement Outpost Siege, yeah, I like it. The Hushwing Griffs are a nice touch, and Circle of Flame is actually really good against some of the token strategies.
Oh yeah, Circle of Flame is an amazing card against tokens or any kind of like small aggressive deck.
Yeah. Scouring Sands and Abzan Advantage, of course, are also wonderful sideboard cards. I like both of those.
We got Abzan Midrange and 6.
I feel like they have incorrectly labeled an Abzan aggro list, because this is definitely... It's got the Rakshasas, the Fleece Manes, the Anafenzas. This is an Abzan aggro deck. I feel that they just mislabeled, because...
Yeah, this looks very mislabeled, because, I mean, I'm looking at this, and this is almost like, okay, this is really aggressive. Like...
Yeah. The top of his curve really is Wingmate Rock, because Tasigur never costs 6 mana.
Right.
But, yeah, not much to say. I mean, Abzan is Abzan. It hasn't changed much. Tassiger, we learned at the Pro Tour, of course, is great in Abzan decks.
Which... Oh, yeah. He's amazing.
Blue-white control.
Yeah.
In seventh place.
Oh, yeah. Blue-white control. So, if you guys didn't play during Return to Ravnica Standard, or if you haven't played Magic at all and are new, completely new to the game, blue-white control is a mainstay.
Yeah, this is not a deck that we've seen recently, but it's not a deck I'm ever surprised to see.
Right.
Because, I mean, the first deck of any prominence called the deck way back in the day was a blue-white control deck that just beat you over the face with two copies of Sarah Angel back in 1994.
Yep.
And blue-white control has always been that spiky, I'm not going to let you do anything style of deck. I'm more of a blue-black control guy myself, which this format's been very receptive to, which I'm a fan of. I never could get behind the Sphinx's Rev decks. It was not my thing, but
yeah.
Deck looks solid. Can't really find any fault with it. Quad Nullify is interesting, and Faded Retribution seems good in this format, but yeah, just not my cup of tea.
Not mine either, really. I instead of the Faded Retribution, he's playing three Inhostilities, but I would much rather play the fourth than the Faded Retribution.
Yeah, you can see that.
And then, of course, in eighth we had the Devotion list.
Yeah, this I like this list better than the one that won, to be honest. I saw that mirror match in the top eight. There were a lot of mana issues on both sides.
Yeah.
I feel like it could have gone either way, and I feel like Tannen's deck is better against everything but the mirror.
Yeah. I can see those, that.
Those triple... Yeah, just... I don't know. I am a big fan of Tannen's version, especially when you get Nykthos going with Shaman. Drawing all those extra cards and
That seems good.
Because the biggest issue with Devotion has always been running out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to run out of gas with Shaman on the field.
Right, exactly. So that was the Star City top eight in Houston. So okay, pretty reasonable top eight. Then we had GP Seville.
Yes. And my pick for one of the best decks in the format actually took down the Grand Prix. Which is blue black control.
Of course, your baby currently.
Yeah, the biggest decks, like the things you've been hearing the most hype about lately, are, like devotion style decks and blue red white aggro.
Mm-hmm.
Blue black control is very good against both of those decks.
Yeah, you just go bigger.
Yeah. Like, you look at this top eight, you see Control, Abzan, two Devotion decks, a Heroic deck, and none of these decks are really hard matchups for blue-black control, because the board wipes keep mono-green, or green Devotion decks from building any type of steam in order to push into the late game, where they just bury you in card advantage. Abzan lists don't have enough threat density to fight through all your removal one for one. And then when you add Ashiok to the issue, I mean, then you're playing their threats against them, which is a nightmare. And I feel like it was a wonderful choice for this tournament. He's got some card choices in here that I'm a little bit... that are a little bit questionable in my opinion, but...
Okay.
Overall, it's pretty solid. Like, he's got basically like 70 of my 75 going here, so.
Okay. So that was Emmanuel Gershenson?
Yes.
So he was, I mean, congrats to him for winning the GP. Mm-hmm. That, I believe, doesn't that qualify him for the next Pro Tour?
Yes, it does.
So, that.
809 players is not a small number.
Oh no, it's not at all. So that that's pretty much the standard the standard portion of everything this week. You're playing Blue Black Control.
Oh yeah.
So you've got the whole like I'm gonna play Pearl Lake Ancients and Ugin and all these big bomby cards.
Well, eventually.
Yeah.
We eventually get to those cards. But really what you're trying to do is survive to the late game. You're one-for-one exchanging with a lot of their cards. And the way you win with Control, like this version of Control, is you have to decide which of their cards are actually worth trading for. Because you can take 8, 9, 10, 12 damage from like a Courser if it's just going to get swept away under a Crux later on.
Right.
You need to identify the threats that actually kill you and the threats that you are okay just letting through.
Right.
Because the problem I see a lot of players struggle with is just wanting to kill or counter every single threat.
Right.
Which you're going to run out of gas if you approach it that way. But yeah, Pearl Lake is really good. You get to bounce your utility lands with it to... Basically, it can never die. It can't be countered. It's instant speed. And then you can keep gaining life with Radiant Fountains or keep scrying or... I mean, the card's just a lot of value. And Ugin, of course, is a monster. So is Ashiok. And...
Yeah. See, and I'm on the other end of the spectrum from you. I'm playing Mono Red Aggro, where I top out at Outpost Siege. That's the top of the curve.
Yeah, I tend to be more of a tempo player, but the way Standard works is you're either on the side of there's shifts in the meta where it's good to be the one presenting questions and threats. Like, here's what I'm doing, deal with it.
Right.
If the answers are good enough in the format, that becomes harder to do. Like, last Standard was very much, here's what I'm doing, stop me if you can.
Yeah.
This format, on the other hand, this blue-black control deck has enough of those tools to actually shut down certain strategies. And those happen to be the more proactive strategies, like Devotion, Red-White, and that I like it. It's you have a lot of disruption and a lot of tools to fight a lot of decks. And with a format as diverse as Standard is right now, that's a big asset to have.
Definitely. One thing I've noticed, though, with my mono red list is if I don't kill them by, like, turn 5, then I'm usually going to lose.
Yeah. I've lost count of the number of games I've stabilized at one life.
Yeah, especially against me.
Yeah, like, we play at the same FNMs quite a bit, and he had me at, like, 1 or 2 life, and then Radiant Fountain, Pearl Lake Bounce Radiant Fountain, play land...
Start. Things just get out of control, and then I start like, oh, okay, that's neat.
And then it's like, he goes to play a spell, and I'm like, which counter spell would you like me to use?
Exactly. Right. So that's kind of the way the deck rolls, I guess.
Yeah.
So another topic that I want to touch on a little bit before we end the show is MTG Origins. So that's the new core set coming out. Here in what, June or July this summer? Yeah.
The final core set.
The final core set, guys. We're not going to have any more core sets after this. Because the block rotation is going to change, of course, and they're changing the whole thing. So MTG Origins is literally the backstory to 5 Planeswalkers. So we've got the backstory to Jace, Liliana, Chandra, Nissa, and Gideon.
Yep.
We don't have Garruk, and we don't have Vajani. They've been kind of swept to the sides.
Well, I mean, we already pretty much know both of their backstories.
Yeah, for the most part.
Like, they did a whole webcomic series on Garruk, and of course we know about Vajani and his issues with his brother, and then, like, they should just put Vajani's face on that book with the dinosaur, All My Friends Are Dead.
Yes.
Because that's Ajani's backstory, basically. It's like
basically. And they kind of alluded to Ajani's brother a little bit in the Commander 2014 product, because he came in as a card.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that this is correct, but based on the things I've noticed about Origins, they originally announced 277 cards.
Sure.
And then quickly changed it to 272.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how this would logistically work, because you have to run a different sheet for card backs, but what if the five planeswalkers we talk about, because this is how they became planeswalkers, is what we're talking about.
It's how they ignite their spark.
So what if we have these planeswalkers as legendary creatures, and then they transform, flip over Innistrad style, into their planeswalker, early planeswalker forms?
That's insane. Now, we all know that Liliana ignited her spark after she accidentally killed her brother.
Yeah, she accidentally poisoned him. She was a healer.
Yeah. One thing we see in the art that they released on the Pro Tour stream was she was in a cleric's robe, her healer's robe.
Yes.
So that means she's going to be based in white somehow?
Possibly. That's what it's looking like. But clerics have historically been white-black, so...
Sure.
We don't know how they'll quite do that, but... I'm just thinking of the commander implications.
Oh, I know. Not only that, what if they're all three CMC or less?
Now, that seems less likely to happen, but sure. I mean, like, yeah, that'd be a thing for tiny leaders, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
I do think that we'll see legendary forms of them.
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
Which would be kind of cool, but...
Be very amazing. I'm really excited. In the Liliana art, you see crows. You see black crows.
Yeah.
Which kind of alludes to the darkness to come type thing.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see the reprints in the set too.
Yeah. And then of course, you know, we've got other sets coming out soon. Modern Masters 2015 is coming out. Of course, the only cards that are still spoiled for this are Etch Champion and Immercool.
Yeah.
So that means Affinity is going to get some well-deserved reprints, and Immercool is going to get a reprint.
Hopefully Mox Opal is one of them.
Let's hope Mox Opal is, because if Mox Opal is a reprint, I'm going to build Affinity.
I've had Affinity built a couple of times, and I traded an entire Affinity list for a place out of Tarmogoyf once.
Okay.
But... Yeah, I played Affinity for about 2 years in Modern, and it's a good deck. I played the red version with Steel Shaper's Gift before they went into the blue for Masters and all of that. But
see, I actually played Affinity when it was in Standard.
Yeah.
And so, that's been a while.
I was on the other side of that, and I was playing the green-white Astral Slide deck that with the Oxidizes and Viridian Shamans in the main, and
yep.
See, you always play the aggro deck, and then I play the deck that just tries to crush it.
Yeah, I love aggro.
Yeah.
Aggro has always been one of those things that I kind of gravitate toward. Although, in my early days of Magic, back in 2001, 7th edition for all you Magic historians out there, I played Mono Green Elves, Ramp Out to Thorn Elemental.
Yep. Blanchfoot Armor, your Thorn Elemental, get there.
Getting there. So, guys, let's go ahead and wrap this up for the people.
All right.
All right, guys. So you guys can get a hold of us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and MTG Cast. We are IRMTG Podcast on all of those. You can also check us out on Gathering Magic. Good old Logan's over there all the time.
Yeah, I admin at GatheringMagic.com's forum, so you can find me there. Under the username Urza. You can check out my email, Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter. I'm on all of those. So, yeah.
And I'm over there at Gathering Magic as well on the forums at IR_Greg. Come by, say hi to us, start up a conversation about whatever format you'd like. You can also catch me on Twitter at GentGreg. I'm on Facebook as well. We also have a Facebook page for the podcast, like I mentioned earlier. Go over there, like us, and then you'll get all the updates for the podcast, what's going on, videos that go up on our YouTube channel as well. We've got actually a deck tech over there right now of my Kiku Knight's Flower Tiny Leaders deck. It's mono black control Tiny Leaders. Very interesting. You guys should go check that out. Here soon, we're going to get Logan some deck techs up.
Yeah, just finding the time. I got a Annex and Psymied deck tech I want to get you guys, and I'll let you guys take a look under the hood of my blue-black control build for Standard, give you my thoughts on that deck and some theory stuff, so eventually.
pretty exciting stuff in the future, so you guys keep a watch out for that. And until next time, guys, this is Greg and Logan signing off. Bye.
Bye.